Okay.
I'm at 13, so I'm at 7.
Welcome to the business breakfast forum today. My name is David Clark. I'm the general manager for Main and Median for the Courier newspaper. Thank you all for braving the weather to get here this morning. We appreciate your attendance. Before we begin the discussion this morning, I'd like to say a quick thank you to some of our sponsors. Those would be Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare, Main Jobs, and the Benefit Cycle Old Orchard Beach Transit. I would also like to say a special thank you to today's host, People's Choice Credit. Thank you all for supporting these events. We appreciate it. With that, I'd like to introduce our moderator for today's discussion on startups and how they were thriving in our local mill. It's Portland Press Herald business reporter, Carol Fulton.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. So typically, I have this little like introductory thing, but we're running a little bit short on time. Thank you, everyone who braved the weather to get here. But I know several of you need to get to the Merida conference right after this, so we're going to try to stick to our timeline. I will say, though, by way of introduction, it was probably 9 or 10 years ago, I was interviewing the founders of Hyperlight, and I went to their mill space. They gave me instructions on how to find them. And I was walking through this cavernous mill, and I realized if I took a wrong turn, nobody's going to find my body for months. As it turned out, I found them, and they were right at the beginning of hiring their first group of commercial sewers. So what actually prompted this topic is I got a press release from Hyperlight a few weeks ago, and they were saying that now they have almost 100 employees there. They make really super high-tech camping gear and outdoor gear. And it's been terrific to see how they have grown from being such a small operation to being a real player now in the outdoor gear industry. And I think they are very frank about saying that part of that success and a real impetus for that success was being able to find space in the mill that would host them and was an affordable space, which allowed them to get their feet under them. So that's what that's why we're looking at startups and mills today as a topic for today's breakfast forum. So I'm going to do a quick introduction of our panelists, and then we can get the ball rolling here. So to my immediate left is Mark Feldman. Mark is the COO of Think Tank. And he also has a day job as he does a lot of wholesaling, negotiating for the grocery industry. But for the last 4 years, he's been managing the think tank space at the Biddeford Mill, which has been about 95% occupied for all of that time. And he's gone through an expansion, and he may be expanding again. So Mark, I'm delighted you can be here with us. Thank Next you. To Mark is Lisa Scally? Okay. Lisa is the marketing director and a principal with Oceans Balance, which is an edible seaweed company that has been around for several years now. They had a place down on Commercial Street, and they were looking because they needed to do an expansion, and the prices in Portland just made their jaws drop. And so they were able to find space also at the Biddeford Mill, which allows them to not only do the work that they were doing initially, but to expand production and also establish a laboratory. So it's a very up-and-coming company. If you're not aware of Oceans Balance, you'll be hearing all about them very soon. And then next to Lisa is Kerry. Is it Haney or Haney? Haney. So Kerry is the owner of Night Moves Bread, which is a bakery that uses only sustainably raised grains, locally sourced. And Lisa says you can always find them because you just follow the smell. It's a really wonderful bakery that Lisa began in her apartment in Portland. And then she did a sharing arrangement with Maples and shared kitchen space with them for a couple of years. And then wanted to move out on her own. And she too found an option at the mill. Where she continues to produce her breads and her other bakery products, primarily as a wholesaler, not a retailer. And then finally, we have Doug Sanford. So Doug is the developer of the Pepperell Mill, who came to the state in the 80s and has always been a big proponent of urban centers, which was sort of counter what everyone else was doing back in the 80s. He bought the mill in 2004. And this is a 1 million square foot complex. And today, about 700,000 square feet has now been developed and occupied. So Doug has a terrific perspective not only on how to manage that kind of space, but also the sorts of real estate trends that are happening right now that are both advantageous for his complex and also providing some headwinds. So these are our panelists. We're going to have a conversation, and then we're going to reserve the last 15 minutes for questions from you. Some of you submitted questions when you registered, and if we don't get to those, I will ask the panelists if they can answer them via email, and then we'll get their responses and distribute them to everyone who's here and who has registered electronically. So, without any further ado, let me begin with our first question, which is to our panelists. Can you talk about what drew you to the mill initially? What were your priorities in choosing space? And I realize that this is a little bit of a different question for Doug, but it would be interesting, I think, for all of us to hear why he bought the mill in 2004. He says some people have described him as crazy, some as a visionary, and some just plain lucky. So anyway, let's get the ball rolling with you, Mark. What brought you to the mill first?
I live in Kennebunkport. Thank you for hosting. This was great. Biddeford's always been on the radar, being this, you know, right next door. We go through Biddeford all the time. And it was really a combination of, for me, of what I was going to do next outside of the grocery business and where I was going to do it. And what drew me towards the mill was once I decided it was going to be a co-working space, I didn't want to travel far. Portland was already had something, but the mill seemed to be that place where everything was gravitating to. If you look at it, I always tell people, if you look at it from above, geographically, it's the epicenter of Boston and Portland and above. It all was right there. And we just felt very comfortable when we walked in there. It just felt right. I'm not that guy, science guy or business guy. It just felt right. I'm very gut-oriented when it comes to business. And it felt good, and we'll get into other questions later. So we saw Biddeford, we saw the rumblings, we felt it, and it just made sense.
How about you, Lisa?
Thanks, Carol, and thanks for hosting. So as Carol said, we were working out of a production facility, actually that was on Presumpscot Street in Portland. It was 850 square feet, and it was fine for making one product, which is all we had when we started 3 years ago. But we realized that we needed to, you know, increase our product offering, and we needed the space to do so. So we started looking for a larger space. And yes, we looked on Commercial Street. Commercial Street made sense because of its proximity to the water, being on the water. And that resonated with us. But we couldn't find a space that worked for us in terms of size, and certainly not in terms of price. So we decided to, you know, broaden our horizons a bit and look a bit further. And yes, we'd heard about the mill. We were very taken with the space that we ultimately leased. It was purpose-built for us, so it's got all of the necessary fixtures that we need. A freezer is in there for when we're harvesting and keeping the seaweed cold. We outfitted one of the rooms with the necessary equipment for a lab, so we're actually growing seaweed now that we're selling to other seaweed farmers. That's a really important part of the business. So, for us, the proximity to the water was important, but all of the benefits that we had working down in Biddeford kind of outweighed it. There's one other thing I should mention. We work closely with the University of New England. They have a marine sciences department. One of my partners is on kind of staff there as a special advisor, so we work closely with them. We also have UNE interns who are helping us. So I've got two this semester who are helping us down at the mill in terms of production. So that relationship with UNE has really grown because we are so close to them now.
And how about you, Carrie?
Thank you. For me, it was also the proximity to Portland. I started my business in my apartment in Portland and then was sharing space at Maple's Bakery in Yarmouth for 2.5 years. And I worked overnight there, 12 to 18 hour shifts, filling the ovens the entire time. So I just had to move. And I live in Portland. I was servicing mostly restaurants and shops around Portland and just needed a larger oven. And the price for anything that I was looking at in the Portland area was just completely out of the question, particularly because I'm using this sustainable regional grain. It's 5 times the price of King Arthur. So that price point was very, very important for our production. So coming to Biddeford, we had plenty of space to grow. Our space was built to suit. We have a loading dock so we can receive pallets of grain. And there were so many other small businesses growing in the same place who we've just come really to support each other.
Terrific. Great. And Doug, so orient us. What brought you to Biddeford to begin with?
Same reason people always say, how did you create all this? We didn't create anything. Kerry created, he's created, and Mark created, and giving you opportunity. And I came here in 1981. Opportunity. We were looking for the new frontier. I was in the Portsmouth area. Felt that things were, we were entry level as far as getting engaged in real estate. I had some real estate down there, but everything was going crazy. And I was looking for the new frontier. And Biddeford was it at all, although the cycles, and we dealt with a perception issue that we still struggle with, and certainly there were things going on, and Merck was a big one, and UNE was a startup, and that transition and taking a chance on a community we kind of believed in, and unfortunately their perception of their own community was difficult to get past. They consider themselves an old mill town. We are also coastal community. That's what globally people see Maine as, Biddeford is no different than Kennebunkport at that point, so I came here and started acquiring real estate and went through the cycles and went through the struggles and headwinds of, Merck was a big one that was difficult.
Does everybody know what Merck is?
It was a bad decision
just
when
checking.
They did it, and then it just continued to, but we felt that the tides were changing, and it took effort and, a lot of community effort, and I look at the folks that are here, and, I what's happened with this, whether it's Kerry or this, these guys want opportunity to grow their world, and it's very different, talked to you about it, Carol, but this generation and how their needs and experiences and what they want to have, and very different than when we were young. It was always the dream of the white picket fence and the house and 2 cars in the garage. That's not this generation. They have no interest in that, and so they want experiences. They don't care about that. They want to travel. They want to do their own thing.
So, Doug, when you bought the mill, did you have a master plan in mind? I mean, now you have we call that a softball question.
Right. Go ahead. No, so when it started, it was just opportunity, same thing. So, Biddeford Textile. So there were 2 different pieces. So I acquired what was Biddeford Textile in 2004. We were attached at the hip with West Point Stevens,
right,
which was acquired by Carl Icahn in 2005.
Right.
A lot of struggles with where we were headed or what we perceived was going to happen with Merck, with West Point. Once Icahn purchased West Point, we felt like, okay, his MO, if anybody's familiar with him, he's a cut and slash guy. He's a Wall Street raider. He was not going to stay in the blanket manufacturing industry. And so that kind of opened another door, the opportunity to. So we started with 360,000 square feet, which is enough for normal needs. And then the opportunity for 750,000 square feet in 2009, which we acquired, which at the time we were just getting out of a little tough time in the in the real estate and the economy. But interestingly enough, we had growth through that whole time, through 2006.
Throughout the recession?
Well, because people, yes, people were paying attention to their bottom line, small businesses, and, you know, and that's really the big reason for the success. And, you know, you talk about a master plan, Bonnie, I heard you laughing. So it was, you know, everybody wanted to see that. It was like, no, we're going to go one bite at a time. You know, we have 18 buildings. And we said, okay, we're going to start with building 18, and if it's just successful, we'll move to the next building. And that's how we've attacked it, and it's working. But it's more also the ability to have some flexibility, especially the early days, you know, to be able to with fit ups or different things, be
right.
able to maneuver around that. You know, and the one thing. That's kind of difficult. We, you know, sheetrock is no cheaper in Biddeford than it is in Portland or Boston. You know, so when you talk about improvements in space, it's really, you know, you can't change that. I can have that base price, but the cost of the improvements are the cost of the improvements. No matter where you are, they vary a little, but, you know, that's something.
So let's talk a little bit about the bottom line and the advantages and the disadvantages of the mills. Both of you referenced, and actually all three of you referenced, that it was much more affordable to go into the mill space than comparable properties that you were looking at elsewhere, particularly in Portland. I know that even we've done a lot of stories about how, like, the Saco Industrial Park is getting tons of spillover from companies that are priced out of Portland. Retail is developing. The multifamily area around here is just growing by leaps and bounds, primarily because investors have money and they can get more bang for the buck by buying a three-story walk-up in Biddeford or Saco than they can in Portland. The cost of entry is a lot lower. So so if you guys would share, what have been some of the advantages and the disadvantages of your mill location? And Lisa, why don't we start with you for that one?
Sure. So as I mentioned, we did look for space down on Commercial Street in Portland. What we ultimately wound up getting in Biddeford was definitely close to 30% cheaper. So for us, that made a big difference. You know, we're still a young company, we're only 3 years old, so we're still counting our pennies, and monthly outlay is still an important thing. The proximity to UNE, I can't make that important enough. What we have gained through working with them has been really valuable, and the interns who come and work with us, they're working for academic credit to work with an aquaculture company, kind of learn behind the scenes what it takes to make a company grow, what the technical challenges are. So they're learning a lot, and I think being able to just drive 10 minutes down the road, it makes a big difference for them as students. I'm not sure they would all want to drive up to Portland to come work for free. So
Lisa, are your interns, are they, they're learning the business of what you're doing as well as the research aspect of what you're doing?
So they're helping us on the production side predominantly, but, you know, we're still a small company that still talks about everything kind of, you know, as a family. So they're hearing me talk about the challenges I have as I try to grow my distribution. They're hearing me as I talk about how can we promote ourselves more effectively on social media, and they're certainly more astute at it than I am. So, you know, having people who actually use social media the way it's supposed to be used is very helpful. They've given me a lot of insights in how we can promote ourselves better. And I just the proximity to others, other small companies who are kind of at the same phase that we are, has also been helpful. Upstairs is a company called Nibmore. He makes chocolate. And Ralph has been very helpful to us, just kind of explaining a bit to us how we can promote ourselves better online from a commercial perspective, where we just put our products up on Amazon. And he's very strong on Amazon, and he kind of walked us through some of the pitfalls to avoid, which was very helpful. And I'm not sure we would have been able to do that if we were located somewhere else, to have that, you know, kind of intimate relationship where you feel comfortable sharing information like that. So that's been a really huge advantage for us.
And any downside? Doug has a very thick skin, so it's okay.
I don't think I'm going to say anything that would hurt. You know, parking can be tight, and I know that's a classic comment for Biddeford, but the parking can definitely be tight. We have a lot of deliveries coming in terms of supplies and a lot of pallets going out as we ship product. Truck drivers still seem to be challenged when it comes to finding the mill. And if I could say one thing, I think if the address could be kind of cleaned up on the internet, when people do GPS, they could find it a little more easily. We spend a lot of time explaining to the truck drivers how to actually get there. And I think our building in particular could benefit from a little bit more signage up at the main street to come down the Laconia dock. And if they knew that we were there, a lot of them go to the front. Yeah, so that's just a little
bit. And we are working on that.
Yeah,
I know. And it's opening up the back.
Right, exactly. So, you know, close quarters, very definitely close quarters. I wouldn't call it a disadvantage. It's something that we just had to learn to deal with.
Mm-hmm. That might be familiar to you, Carrie.
Yes. Yes, I would say disadvantages really are the same. We're actually in the same building. I'm just upstairs. And while maybe we aren't sending things out or receiving things in exactly the same way, we're delivering our bread from Kennebunk to Belfast every week. It's a lot of bread. And we're receiving whole pallets of grain from Skowhegan, from small farmers. We have a mill in the bakery. So navigating to where we are is very important. And as we've grown our wholesale outside of Biddeford, people from this area, from Saco, from Arundel, from Biddeford, have come to be able to buy bread right at the bakery. Even though it didn't even look like a place that you could go in, didn't look like we were open, over the summer particularly, every single day, people were coming by to just poke their head in and see what we were doing. And
I was one of those people.
So finally it was like, okay, we should be open for retail. So as we are growing our retail on Fridays and Saturdays, that parking has been a huge challenge. It's very limited and increasingly limited, and navigating the GPS. Sometimes people can find our space no matter how specific my directions are. Yeah. It's a challenge. Sometimes people are taken to Biddeford Pool or to a cemetery on West Street.
Yeah.
So I would say those are the largest disadvantages, which, I mean, if I were only doing wholesale and retail were out of the question, I think it would be less of a concern. But as my business grows to kind of balance things out with that retail, it's more and more important. Advantages, we have a ton of space to grow. Our bakery is beautiful. It's a nice place to be. I'm there a lot. It's a very nice place to be. And I have amazing neighbors who are all of these other small businesses who are pretty new. So we can just share information about who do you use for payroll,
right.
You know, are you using Square? I sort of partnered with Rover Bagel. We shared an employee who would feed my starters on the weekend so I could have a day off. And they sold my bread without taking any cut from the price. And I became friends with the folks from Sweet Cream. We started collaborating with their ice cream flavors. So a lot of these things are just happening organically. And it really seems like people are excited to support each other. And I think that energy is in Portland as well. But because we're smaller, it's a little bit closer knit, a little bit more of a neighborhood feel in Biddeford. And I can't say enough how nice that is.
Great. And how about you, Mark? What have been the ups and the downs?
So co-working is a different model. They're in manufacturing and wholesale production. So their needs are a lot different than what ours were. But in the end, if you listen to what everybody's saying, going to Pepperell Mill was one-stop shopping. As a business owner, we all have certain skill sets. When we were able to walk into the mill and basically have a conversation, decide they were the ones we wanted to partner with and open up a space, it was one-stop shopping. Here are a set of plans. Doug's team, I mean, you guys, I'm sure, had the same experience. There are ups and downs, conversations to get heated, whatever, But at the end of the day, we just handed them a set of plans and oversaw what they were doing. They did everything. We didn't have to do a thing except write a check. And for me, I didn't have to go figure out permits. I didn't have to figure out plumbing. I didn't have to figure out, I just had to tell them where it was going. And they took care of everything. Plus, since he has his own construction team, as you mentioned, costs were significantly less. Yes, materials cost the same, doesn't matter where you are, as Doug says, but because he has his own team, it was cheaper, okay? And that was a big advantage. So that was taken care of. There's, you know, we just felt very comfortable. The location, I don't know how many people here know where we are, but we're pretty visible. I mean, the ability to put that glass atrium out front in the middle there, that was a big, big advantage. We're kind of, usually if we went to a town, we would want to be on Main Street. Where we are, we're on Main Street. We're just not on the front there because of the event space. But we felt we were on Main Street. We are totally always amazed with the number of people that come through that space, which was an advantage. All those people, we tell them where you are. Don't worry. Thank we get you. Them there. We get you. Because our doors are open. I'm there all the time. So we see a lot of people with that, you know, big eyes. Where am I? I don't know where I am. So we get the truckers down to you as best as we can. Disadvantages? I'm not a disadvantaged guy. You get a challenge here or there. It basically has no effect. Okay? Parking, it has an effect. But it's something we've worked out, and our members know what to do, which is important. Down the road, that could probably be the biggest disadvantage, only from the standpoint of where, what our members' price point is, and then how parking possible pay will affect their membership. So that could be a disadvantage, but that's not the Mills issue. That's a town, city, everybody issue that they're trying to figure out, and Biddeford's doing the best they can based on the information they have and they gather through themselves. So I won't go there. I mean, I can go on and on about the advantages. I mean, think about it. You got electricity, you got internet, you got all those different things. What we pay in the mill, because we're a city, okay? So we all share those rates. As it's different, and you know what my partner pays in Portland, you know, we don't pay those rates. Okay, it's pretty amazing. So, thank you, Doug.
So one of the things, both Lisa and Kerry, you touched on this sort of organic collaboration with neighbors, and there's this sort of energy that emanates from the mill. I frankly was surprised. Here's a place where there are 500. Employees and a huge number of startup companies, and comparatively speaking, there's a real critical mass of startups there, but there's no presence from any of the agencies that exist to help startups. So it's interesting to me that you guys talk among yourselves, well, this is the payroll company you should consider, and you know, but there's no SCORE office, there's no the Maine Center for Entrepreneurship doesn't have a presence there. And I asked Tom Rainey about that. And he said, well, that makes sense that we would, but basically we have a statewide perspective and they have the Top Gun programs and other things. And there are other organizations too, but none of them have a presence there. And I was surprised by that. So I wonder if you could talk a little more about this organic collaboration that pops up with, you know, how you manage your businesses and what kind of guidance you get from one another.
Sure. I mean, it really is just seeing people repeatedly, you know, and just starting to talk and have those conversations. There are a lot of other food businesses, so sometimes we're ordering from the same people. We've had a lot of the same frustrations with Native Maine or et cetera. So we'll receive deliveries at the same time. We'll receive them for each other, go in on a delivery so that we can meet a minimum. Those conversations really are just happening organically, or maybe it's something that people feel like would complement products that they're already selling, like Sweet Cream's Top Ice Cream is an ice cream made with our cookies. At Ro Rover Bagel, they were selling out of bagels really fast. So they would have our bread there. It's a little bit like, well, we still have something. a lot of things like that just happen organically in conversation, I would say.
And did you all just end up co-locating next to each other? It wasn't like, Doug, you said this is going to be the food service area of the mill, right?
Well, Building 10 was sort of, that was the vision.
It was,
you know,
okay.
It started with Eventide, put their commercial kitchen in there. And, you know, the hope is that also the more folks we put in there, then that's what's happening with people are gravitating. And if you haven't tried Carrie's bread, it's crazy. Yeah, it's unbelievable, like nothing is that. So that's why she was, somebody said you're the best bread in Maine. And I'm with them.
207.
Yeah, 207. Called them the best bread in Maine. And it is unbelievable. But, you know, the fact that people are finding their way there. And the more we put there, the more it's going to happen. We eventually, you know, whether the market is helpful, but whether that moves down to the lower parking lot and things. And, you know, we're still working on the problems we have, and, you know, the parking, the visibility, the wayfinding, and those are things that are a work in progress. But, yeah, it did... You know, one of the things that has happened in our, if you look at some of the mills in Maine and how they developed with, adaptive reuses and things, they're stuck with one building and everybody around. Well, not everybody works together. If you've got a woodworker, it doesn't work next to Carrie's business or, you know, somebody or an office or those kind of things. So we have the fortunate ability to be able to kind of say, okay, strategically, we looked at, it started off when we were developing the first building, everybody went in, you know, and then as we developed, we said, okay, this is going to be the offensive building where you have woodworkers and metal workers and things like this, and this will be a foodie building, and this will be residential, and it's because we have 18 buildings and able to separate them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and it is an important part of the redevelopment process. You know, if you visit Dana Warp as a prime example, you know, they're all kind of put in there. Does it where I know there's, you know, kind of, you know, issues about, you know, how they work together.
Okay. So I'm also curious, if there's one amenity or service that you could have that would help your business grow, what would that be?
In my mind, I don't even know how I could explain this, but I know that so many companies are shipping product out due to online sales, and a lot of people are using UPS or some carrier like that. And I don't know how this would work, but rather than everybody driving over to UPS, wouldn't it be great if we could have like a centralized drop-off place?
We talked about that with UPS, creating a closet, that there were issues with that, and I forgot what they were, because Hyperlite was a prime example, creating a room and a loading dock where we stock the product.
Yep, exactly.
And, we have it on the radar screen, but was it FedEx or UPS had some issues with it. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that. It can't be locked. Or, you know, there was, and I don't remember what it is, but it's certainly something we'd love to work on.
Yeah.
You know, and so have that. And also, you know, we always struggle with, from our standpoint, I know everybody's like, pallets or things that come with what you're doing, you know, how, you know, if we had a better system of dealing with those, you know, and we don't, because it's all a element of cost. Yep. You know, but we have for, but it more importantly, I think it's political will, you know, that there was a time when pallets had value. You know, if they have value, then people will deal with them. You know, instead, you know, it's like cans. They're not on the side of the road because they have 5 cent value. So somebody will deal with
them. They have value for me. I will actually walk around and borrow them from people.
Yeah, well, they... yeah.
Oh, great. I'm only looking for pallets.
Yeah, so pallets have value.
Yes, definitely.
They do have
value. Well, they check pallet program. They're out there.
Of them, and they build up, you know, whereas the user who's producing them, if they had deposit value, then you could take them and, you know, so those kind of things. You know, and we were on our issues with, the parking, wayfinding. This has been an interesting, you know, and I will go there a little on the political side, you know, and
how
the community,
yeah,
right? how the community has to engage this stuff. If you love what's, you know, support Carrie's Bread, I don't care how you go to the cemetery first, but, you know, if you want this stuff to happen, we have to support it. You know, and our success has been, you know, a lot of it has been about supporting the business, the small business. You know, Hyperlite's a great example. They had no money. They had, we have what we call VC without any C, no capital. You know, we have space, we have data, we have, you know, they lived in our apartments initially, you know, and it's okay, how do, you know, it was only successful for us as well, you know, the more the growth and their ability to expand, you know, has been a big benefit. You know, we'd like to be at some point where, sorry, we don't have any more space to expand into, but our, you know, when you look at these different businesses, if Kerry were to grow, we can say, hey, we got another 3,000 square feet downstairs, you know, and that's been a big advantage, or, you know, because these folks hope to grow their businesses, and some grow and some shrink, and how do we have incentives? You know, I was talking to you earlier about Pine Tree Zone. Do you take advantage of that at all? No. You don't?
I'm not sure. I don't think
so. You know what I mean? So Pine Tree Zone was set up for growth in these old industrial sites, and they have, you know, you don't have a sales tax, you don't have a thing. And we went to the state and, you know, told them, we collaboratively, we have 500 jobs in this place. You know, if I came to the state and said, I'm going to create 500 jobs, I'm going to bring my company here, they would bend over backwards. Yeah, but the same, in the same conversation, they leave as quick as they come. I got Mississippi offered me a better deal. We're leaving Maine and taking our 500 jobs. That will never happen in this complex. Some grow, some shrink, but how do we put incentives at the state level that are not, yet you probably could qualify for Pine Tree if you filled out, you know, 5,000 pages of complicated things and waded through, you know, this mess. Again, set up for the top of the food chain. How do we support these small 1, 2, 3 people businesses that, you know, at the, you know, at the state level and the federal level, you know, and you know, it's kind of difficult, I know, but it's certainly something that I think should happen, especially collaboratively. We have 500 jobs, and it's a great thing.
So you'd like to, your amenity is you'd like to see more resources and incentives directed toward the really small
sure.
startups.
Well, and this parking thing, very contentious, you know, and access and the rest of those things. We've been talking about it when Bonnie was mayor. How long, you know, I mean, that was 20 years ago, you know, that, oh, we're going to, you know, and it's chicken and the egg. What comes first? Now, of course, you know, when we talked about it 10 years ago when I started the project, or 15, you know, well, 16 years ago, you know, when the city was, we still don't have a parking structure. You know, and there was an interesting Bangor last night, if anybody watched Channel 6 News, parking, you know, and people complaining about Main Street parking. And, you know, this is something, if we want these things to grow, and they are so important, you know, the infrastructure was not set up. And, you know, political will and incentives, you know, instead of it's all disincentives, you know, like, okay, we have to pay to park. Yeah, great. Give us an opportunity to, like you say, public transit or
public transport.
Yeah,
public,
you know,
transportation would make such a difference.
Such a difference, you know, and, you know, opportunities. And, you know, but usually we change it, hit the wallet, and we all came here. Anybody have more than one person in their car today? I don't think so. You know, and those kind of things, you know, you look at it, we collectively bought 70 cars here. You know, or 60 cars.
So have there been conversations about bringing public transit into the mill complex?
We talked to the group that runs it at one time. And we do have a stop out front for Zoom, I think it is, or one of them. And rarely is it used, or I don't know if they moved it or not. We looked at zip cars, but that's near impossible. Because you have to commit to so much use, and we weren't that. And we've tried to look at what we call mill cars, so that we were going to acquire some vehicles, you know, that you, as a member, you would have access to and you use it as, but it still doesn't make sense, you know. And that, again, is political will and incentives at a level that makes sense. Or when gas goes to $6 a gallon again, you know, you make changes, and that's how we operate, you know, unfortunately. And I feel that that's not far on the horizon, whatever it is, whether it's natural disasters or we go to war or something else that changes our habits. And, you know, we are very close. I mean, we can't maintain what we have for infrastructure, you know, our roads, more traffic. It's just getting worse, and you know, we love our cars.
Yeah, it seems like public transit is sort of that conversation is coming into a moment, not just here, but in Portland for sure,
yeah. And
other places. I know we had the woman who's the head of the Kennebunkport Chamber here for one of these breakfast forums a few months ago, and workforce, you know, attracting and retaining workers is a huge issue all around the state. And for her tourist businesses in that area, they want to be able to find like retirees or other people who maybe would work part-time there, but they don't want to drive. And there is a bus service, but the bus service is almost entirely designed to take retirees in Kennebunkport to the mall so they can shop. There's no sort of commuter suggestion about the schedule or you know, about what the services could be. So I think it would be interesting to see where that goes here in Biddeford Saco, because certainly there's a lot of development coming this way. And it will be exactly the same situation Portland finds itself in now, with more hotels, more office complexes, and people saying, if you have to get, well, you probably know this, Lisa, if you have to get from one end of Commercial Street to 295, you better set aside a half an hour, because it's going to take you that long to maneuver those downtown streets, especially in the summer when there are lots of tourists around.
I would say, too, as far as infrastructure, we have the train. We have the train station going to Saco, but in the morning, it is only at 5 a.m.
Right.
and 8 a.m.
Yeah.
I commute from the Portland area. I would take the train every single day, but that doesn't make sense for my business. I'm already working a 14-hour day. Will I get up 2 hours earlier just to catch the train? That doesn't make sense. So I know that I'm not the only person in that situation.
That's right. That's right.
I think a lot of the public transportation is, once you get outside of Biddeford or you look at where your employees live, you'll find that they're very rural. I mean, we have over 40 plus members, and I can tell you on one hand how many live in Biddeford, and maybe on the other hand tell you how many live Portland or Saco. Most of the other ones live far in rural areas, because that's why they're coming to Maine. They're coming to take advantage of what Maine has to offer, and they're not all moving to Portland. They're all moving into the small towns outside of the development to take advantage of better pricing on housing. If they're gonna spend $300,000 on a house, they're gonna get more house, get some land, develop it, you know, and have that lifestyle. So getting those people who work in the mill into town, they'd have to drive to a park and ride, hop on a bus, and then come into town. So that's the disadvantage that I see of the people that are working in the mill, is they really don't have the need for public transportation, or they're just wouldn't connect to it on easily. Where you live in Portland, you come down, yes, you could hop on a train, you could hop on the bus if it was, and that makes sense, or through Saco, Scarborough, stuff like that. But once you start heading on the other direction west, it'd be very difficult unless they start taking advantage of park and ride and stuff like that. So I see that's, from my standpoint, I see that, you know, yeah, it'd be great, but I don't see how it would really play out at this time. You know, it'd be down the road.
Huh? And the park and rides are full.
Right.
So we can't grow Zoom
right.
the turnpike, because those rural people have no place to park to get on the bus.
Right. So, I mean, it's something has to be looked into. I don't think you can take a European model and close off downtown. I mean, I always thought it'd be great to close off part of Main Street and make it all walking and push the people out. But David Shaker said, no. Don't open that can of worms, Mark. But, you know, it will change. I mean, it will change. Things will happen.
So public transportation and an option for public transportation was one of the questions that we had submitted when people registered. Do folks have other questions? We can use the last few minutes to answer them here. Yes.
I'm curious about, so I'm happy to hear about the companies that are based in the mill, but I'm also curious about, to what extent is the mill serving as a place where remote workers, like Boston companies, you know, to what extent is it part of this larger New England economy with remote folks who are using that as a base camp, but working for non-Maine companies? Is that a large chunk of the folks in the mill trivial?
Well, that would be me.
Or other folks in the mill that are small offices.
I don't know. You find it?
There's a home loan business.
Oh, GRC. Yeah, that started where we were. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, all. I'm thinking real quickly of all the members that are at Think Tank. Two were born and raised Saco Biddeford. They came back. They've come back to raise their family. One works for Spotify. Another works herself. She's a graphic designer, amazing, amazing designer. All the rest are true transplants. They've decided to come live in Maine, and they're remote workers. Yeah, they work for somebody else or themselves. Yeah, I think they all are from away. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I see that wind is not going to stop. Have you been to Boston lately? Have you been to anywhere that living, working, and why would you do that? You know, sit in traffic for 2 hours and... So, I mean, everybody, we always get concerned about what's going to happen. We're going to hit a wall with growth and things. And every time I go south, I go, nope. More people are going to continue to come to Maine. It's real. We have been discovered.
There's an organization that's a network service for remote workers. And the name of it is escaping me, but if you give me your name afterwards, I will send it to you. And it is growing. Lots and lots of people have realized they can work for a California tech company and pull down that kind of salary and get a wonderful quality of life by living here in Maine. So they're sort of, they've got the best of both worlds.
So to follow up on that, working with Martha Benton, you know Martha, sure. Okay, she, through co-working grants and so on, they put together a group of co-working groups, and we're all getting together next week. But Liz Trice from Peloton went out and did some research about the whole remote workforce. There are over 40,000 people live in the state of Maine who are remote workers.
It's a good chunk.
Okay, but I mean, or a stay-at-home workforce. So that's a large population. Okay, that could be the one guy who lives up in Rockland, 6 months a year, whatever it could be. But it's still a large force. And I think again, if you go back to my earlier statement, if you look at Biddeford, where we are geographically, it has to happen. Okay, that's why Doug built 51 more apartments. They're full. That's why Lincoln Mill is going to have 148 and they're going to be sold. That's why River Dam's going to be full before they get done. They're coming either from Portland or Boston in those areas, and the same thing's happening in Westbrook, Gorham, Topsom. They're starting to be pushed out of the Portland area, or they're coming from away. So, yeah. It's on the radar, Adam. I mean, you're very involved in the startup community and what's going on, and yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Another question? Yes, Bonnie.
Mark, I'm just thinking, you said, I remember when you opened your spa, and now to say that you've been pretty much at full capacity from the get-go, do you see where you will expand? That type of space?
Yes and no. it's a conversation I have with myself all the time, because you hit this wall of need. It's not cheap to build out a co-working space. I have the space, Doug. I mean, there's, 6,000 square feet above me, Doug, that you'd love for me to take tomorrow? I mean, so the space is available. A couple things stop me from doing it, and a couple things push me to do it. But the pushing
hasn't won out yet.
No, and a lot of it is I don't know if I could fill it to make it work. I don't know yet. I could probably get the remote workers, the floating membership, but that's not what I need to make it work. There's a formula that I run to tell me if it makes sense to do, because there's not, the profit is very slim, and Doug could tell you, because we're in the same business, we rent space, and You know, if you don't hit a certain percentage of occupancy, you're bleeding money. And I don't want to bleed money. My job was to get out of the house and not lose money. Knock on wood, I was fortunate to do it.
But one of the things you mentioned when we chatted before this is that the range of the rents that you offer your tenants are not quite, but almost half what comparable co-working space in Portland will
right.
charge.
And I'm being
so as long as you have that kind of a difference, there's, I think, probably sustained interest in coming this way.
And that's I'm getting a lot of push from the other side of our company about my rents. And I want to keep them low. I don't want to. And a lot of it is I actually have to keep them low because I have to be in partnership with Doug. I mean, there's a lot of people that come to me that want a larger office that I can't supply. I have to be able to, I give them to Doug or his team, and we are pretty much at the same price point, okay? I mean, he can keep his rents lower, which he does because he needs to rent them out. So I have to be comparable. I can't go charging X because you're in a co-working space. Yeah, it's glamorous, but at the end of the day, someone's got to write that check, you know?
Another question? Yes.
I guess for Doug and Mark, to what extent do you curate your communities in terms of, you know, it sounds like you at least functionally set aside a building for like businesses. Is there a particular, are you soliciting stuff or just hoping the right people show up?
No, we do, you know, people always, after they leave, say, what are you doing for marketing? And we don't do a lot of marketing, but we do, you can imagine, every day folks come in and they want to do something. We do look at what they do, and we have to make a huge investment into the space just to create a white envelope, and we have turned down numerous, potential clients that you look at this and say, how long is it going to last? Because let me tell you, when their business fails, you know whose fault it is. Mine. Okay? You know, whether it's parking, whether it's too much cost, whether it's just a reality of human nature. And it's never the business plan. Okay? It's always some other factor. And so we are constantly, and that's been, you know, earlier on, we if you had the money you were in, you know, now we're being much more selective because it ends up, being a problem, taking responsibility for the fact that you really had a lousy business plan is really hard for someone, and I understand that they're in failure, and we're going to grab at any straw possible for the reasons we failed, okay? And so we are much more in the investment that we have to put because everybody needs something else, That's the one thing. We are fortunate to have this infrastructure that we were left. It's amazing, with natural gas and with power and those kind of things that all these guys need, and so we're able to, do it cost effectively but when you talk about the improvements, that's a cost that we do have our own DIY team, but it's still very expensive and we have a big investment in that space. And the next guy, everybody assumes, oh, look, you did all those improvements. Next guy, well, now the next guy says, rip all that out. I want something different. So, we have to be very selective.
I think we have time for one more question. Yes.
With the prices on the Portland Peninsula being so high, both for commercial and residential, and when I talk to people that are feeling squeezed out or they can't get into that market, but they still want that environment, they feel like they have two choices. One is to go up to Brunswick, where you have an urban feel, somewhat, and the other is what you guys have created. If there was one thing that you would call for, what would it be to increase that flow, because you've got space for both commercial and residential. What is it? Transit? Is it parking? Is it what is it that would accelerate that flow?
Parking and visibility and I guess and again I probably don't more municipal support for what we're doing. And this whole community, that the political will to grow the, and I shouldn't say that because it's been it's been working much better, but every obstacle that we have is, you know, whether it was Merck, whether it was parking, there was so much dissension on both sides. There was no reason when how so we've increased the tax base by $30 million. Okay, that's huge. You know, when you talk about with no infrastructure improvements really from the municipality, sewer, water, roads, that's all existing, you know. And so we still get so much pushback, you know, when we talk about the parking thing. They think they're building it for me, you know. And the fact, oh yeah, why would we build a parking structure for Doug? And that is not at all, you know. If they look at our now, you know, we are still eking out, you know, every time we're still continue to fully invest. And you know, Carol talked about it's a transition. It's first you're crazy, then you're a visionary, and then you're lucky. We're still waiting to get lucky. You know, it is a constant investment, and we need, and you know, we've all, most everybody in this room has been through cycles, you know, and you know, when is the shoe gonna drop here, and tenants are gonna struggle, and these small mom and pops, and you know, a lot of them are hobbyists almost, you know, they wanna start a business, but the reality of are they making any money? No, and we depend on that stuff, you know, that they have opportunities and they grow their business, you know.
And Mark, did you want to respond?
I think one of the things that I feel is that the people, let's say the people of Portland are looking for a place to go to open up a business or do whatever they want to do. I think they have some set of blinders on when it comes to Biddeford. I don't know what it is, but I do think they do. I think they still, we talked about support, business startup stuff. The same thing that's in Portland, we have it in Biddeford. It's just not as visible, okay? We have all the same support. We have everything you need. What I find is they come, they may talk to Doug, and they get a feel for the product, but they don't go out and talk to Lisa. They don't go talk to me. They don't talk to Carrie. They don't get a feel of what the town will do for them. When we were getting ready to open up Think Tank, we talked to Doug and got a great, I mean, we partnered, and it was great. Okay, but we also went and had a long conversation with Alan Cassavant. We met with their economic development. We spent a lot of time with Delilah Papour because we wanted to get the understanding of what was going on, and you can't get it by a drive-by or a five-minute conversation or a 21-day conversation with somebody. You have to do your homework, and I think if people understand that and come to Biddeford and look, They'll figure it out and go, shoot, I should have come here 3 years ago.
And so just to add to that, Biddeford is statistically the youngest population in the entire state. And when you're in the oldest state in the nation, having a really young population center is a huge economic advantage. So it'll be interesting to see the way that sort of rolls out in the future of the Biddeford-Saco area, because there's a lot of energy, there's a lot of youth, there's, you know, there are hip things to do. Not that I would know about such things, but the young people on my staff tell me that things are happening, and in fact, two of them moved here recently. So I think that Biddeford's coming into its own right now.
I would like to add to that also. I don't think there's anything that we have to do to increase, to make this wave happen. It's happening now. I'm 33, and I know so many people from Portland who've moved to Biddeford and just purchased homes in the last year. There's so many other businesses that just opened up on Main Street in Biddeford in the last year. I know of so many other businesses that are about to expand in the next year or two. It's happening now, and I think transit, yes, would definitely help. I would point to that over and over again. We need to make the trains and buses happen. We need the bike paths to happen, but more so the trains, because we're navigating these distances. And I think a lot of the stigma against Biddeford coming from Portland is there's so much going on in Portland to go to Biddeford, even though it's 30 minutes, it's just 30 minutes away, but it's 30 minutes away. So people make an event out of it, you know, grab a bunch of people in a car, go to Palace Diner or whatever. And now there's a lot more to add to that trip. And if we had that transit, I think it would just happen more frequently.
Great. Well, will you please thank me, in, I mean, join me?
Well, thank you.
I was up at 4:30 this morning, so you'll have to forgive me for that. But yes, thank you all for coming. And we will try to answer the questions you submitted. So check your email for those in the future. And drive carefully. Looks like maybe it stopped snowing, or at least it's lightened up a little. It's a little lighter. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. We try.
Happy to help out.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Nice. Good input.
Thank you. We try.
Yeah. One of the things that I talk about with my partner, Mitch, he and I both have a professional large corporation.